Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology office hours call for the month of July 2019. So what I wanted to do first and foremost is to welcome all of our new members. A lot of you recently joined the Insulin Resistance Practitioner Training, and this might be your very first call with us. So welcome. Welcome to our community. It's a great community of people who are dedicated to really helping people get to the root cause of their problems. And with insulin resistance, those of you who joined, it's such an overlooked problem, as you know, and as you've heard me talk about, and as you're obviously believing because you're here. For me, one of my passions is actually getting this to be recognized more and getting more of you out there really talking about this and training people. So the way that these calls work is that you get to come here and just ask whatever questions, bring cases, bring samples, you know, hey, I'm working with somebody who this, that, or the other thing. How can I support them better? You're welcome to get on the phone with me, and I love that. I love to go back and forth on the phone and really iron out and hammer out a problem and help you to solve it. You're welcome to ask questions about content in the program. These calls are calls where people from multiple programs that we're running come together. We have people in our nutritional endocrinology practitioner training. We have people in our digestive mastery and in our insulin mastery. So you might meet with other people. You'll hear some other things. You'll get exposed to things that maybe not within the program that you're dealing with, but you'll get to see my thought processes in action when I'm helping people to try to solve health problems. I believe that we are first and foremost, we are kind of like good detectives that know about the body and how it's working, and are really looking to help people to see why something went wrong, what happened, what's within their control to change, and then to empower them to make changes. So the way that calls work is if you're on the phone and you have a question or a comment or just want to share a success or anything at all, *2 raises your hand, *2, if you're on the phone. If you're on the web call, there should be a box that says raise hand or a little button that says raise hand. And if you're just listening in on the web, which a lot of people do, let me see, there's quite a number of you who are just listening. So what you do is you go ahead and type your question in or your stats or whatever you want questions about. And there's a Q&A box and then there's a chat box, and you can do it in either one. A lot of folks joined after the kickoff call, which happened last week, and we said that we would do another kickoff call. We're still trying to find a good date that's going to work. To just do a kickoff call, just to, you know, kind of get to know you and give you an overview. But a lot of you have already jumped right in, so may or may not need that. But we're still looking for a time. I just wanted to make sure that you're aware of that. We didn't want to do it this week because we had this call. And so we'll be looking. And next week is probably going to be crazy for us. So it might be the first week in August or last week in July. So anybody, I see some questions typed in. So if you can't make it live, I always invite you to type in questions. And I usually like to go through those typed in questions first, so that way when you come, you can listen to the beginning. I just have one comment in the Q&A before the question from Cynthia. Hey, Cynthia, good to hear from you. We helped her a lot on the last call, so she said it really helped her a lot. So that's great. And then there was some, Gail. Can being on low-carb or paleo diet create insulin resistance? You know, some people write about the fact that that could create insulin resistance because basically you're not exercising the muscle enough, so that when you do eat a high-carb diet that you have to be more careful. I haven't seen anything that says that that's absolutely, that that's a risk. I don't see that it as a risk. But there's certainly people talking about it. I just haven't seen any real good studies on that. And how do parasites affect blood glucose and insulin? And that's a great question. So parasites create stress in the body. And anything that has create stress in the body, whether it's physiologic stress with biochemical stress, emotional stress, or external stress with toxins and all, those things create stress on the body, which causes the body to have a response. An HPA axis response, hypothalamic pituitary adrenal, right? So the body perceives the stress and the adrenals get stimulated, which raises cortisol levels. And one of cortisol's jobs is to increase the blood sugar. So any kind of stress in the body can cause an increase in blood sugar. And it could be, like I said, it could be a gut thing. It could be a parasite. It could be heavy metals. It could be physiologic stress. It could be exposure stress and any number of things. So that's how that affects it. How it affects insulin is that when the blood sugar goes up, the insulin gets produced. If there's a situation where the person's not producing enough insulin, then the blood sugar is going to stay high. Or it can, if the person has insulin resistance from too much insulin over time, then we're going to have an increase in insulin resistance when there's parasite. I find that some folks who have elevated blood sugar in the morning, we oftentimes tell them to look for parasites. I mean, over and above, like, was there a situation, a trauma situation in younger years where the body is not able to rest and de-stress overnight and that the cortisol levels do come up? Or it could be something like a parasite because they tend to lay eggs in the middle of the night. So, good question. Right. A third, oh, come on, a few more questions here too. Good. Then we have Debbie. Says, can your brain be insulin resistant without your whole body being insulin resistant? Sure. I think everybody's bodies are different, and we kind of have genetically, we have that weak link or from previous exposure. So in other words, I take it you're asking, can the body start to develop, say, memory issues or issues with brain fog, et cetera, before actually seeing it in the body? And yeah, I would say, that's certainly a possibility. And on the flip side, if your insulin resistance, does that automatically mean your brain is too? So if the cells are insulin resistant, right, it's more likely that there's insulin resistance in the areas that are more prone to it. So say muscle, and somebody who's an athlete and is working out, their muscle cells are not going to become as insulin resistant as, say, their liver cells or other cells, and including brain. So I don't know that we have any studies or anything we can pin our hat on to say that there's an equal distribution of insulin resistance throughout the body. I mean, it could be related to exposures, genes, et cetera. The thing with insulin resistance in the brain, and the thing that really bothers me in relationship to Alzheimer's, is that in the insulin degrading enzyme, the enzyme that actually breaks down the insulin after it's used up, will it be the same enzyme, is the same enzyme as breaks down the plaques in the brain. So when we have those plaques that develop as a result of toxic exposures, et cetera, and that those contribute to Alzheimer's. So when we are having a large influx of insulin as a result of dietary choices and stress, that's going to be impacting the brain's ability to break down those plaques. So it's more than just developing insulin resistance in the brain. It's actually creating the inability to break down the plaques, which then cause problems in the brain. Debbie, module one, the chart has triglycerides as 150, is diabetic. Module two says 110, which is correct. Technically 150, a diabetic, if somebody has it over 150, most likely they are going to be diabetic. That chart is really a reference, a guideline chart. I am suspicious when people have it over 110 that they have severe insulin resistance or diabetes. So, I mean, technically probably 150, but it's all kind of relative. Debbie, I took the BLM assessment and noticed that the total was translated into a percentage. Yes. Is that something you will show us how to do, or just plug our clients' numbers in it automatically? If you're using the online assessment, which you're using for yourself, but you're not going to be able to send your clients to my online assessment, you're going to have to create your own, because my online assessment, they're going to go into my system, and that's not what you want. So how do you calculate a percentage? So that's why I've given you at the end of each of the sections, it will say the total possible number of points. So say there's 5 questions, if everybody gets a 3 on each of the questions, that's 15 is the maximum. And say their score is 12, 12 divided by 15 times 100 would be the percentage. So it goes back to, like, I don't know, fourth grade or fifth grade math when we learned how to calculate percentages, and that's all that is. So you're totaling up their total score for that section. What's the total possible score? You divide it, and then you say times 100. So that's basically how you do it. Now, you can create these, you can redo these assessments, and you can use Google you can use a Google form. There's other form programs out there. We use a particular one that we've customized to work with our Infusionsoft, so we can tag people when they fill out forms. But if you don't have that situation, then Google form is fine. And there's even ways to tag people there using some sophisticated software stuff called Zapier. But you basically can go and create, take my questions. You can change the wording of them, do them however you want, plug them into a Google form. They're free. And then they do have a method to calculate total scores. I don't know that they have the sophistication to calculate a percentage, but they do have the ability to add the scores, and then you can just do it for your clients, just times it by, divide by the total amount, and then times it by 100. Chris. Yeah, this is a great question. In a case like yours, where you found out you're insulin resistant despite being healthy, does it indicate that your issue is more of a genetic factor? Yeah, so this is a good question. First of all, by medical standards, I'm not insulin resistant. I'm pre-insulin resistant. My fasting blood sugars are, generally speaking, in the 60s and 70s. My postprandial glucoses, if I eat sweeter foods, will raise a lot. And when I looked at my genetics, there's a ton of them. So yes, there's a certain percentage of the population that has this genetic tendency and has to be super careful throughout their lives. There's another set, like the George Burgesses of the world, that can smoke and drink and do all kinds of stuff and still live to be a ripe old age. So yeah, a lot of genetics plays into this. Absolutely. Good question. Okay. Insulin resistance, Chris, insulin resistance begins in the large muscles. Is that accurate? Yeah. Untrained muscles is where insulin resistance will happen. So that's why we really focus on the fitness piece, because if you get people to keep their muscles trained, they're going to be less insulin resistant. They're going to pull in the glucose much better. Where does it start? I mean, it might start in the muscles, in the large muscles. I think liver is a big piece too. Insulin resistance in the liver is pretty powerful as well. And I don't know, for example, if there's any studies that definitively show where it would start. Susanna, when I take the blood glucose balancing juice, my glucose gets elevated. Is that normal? No, that means that you shouldn't be taking it. Wait a minute. This morning it was 89 and it went up to 93, 30 minutes later 92. That's fine. That's totally normal. So here's the thing. The glucose is going to go up no matter what we eat. Okay, there are some foods that will have a tendency to help us balance it and bring it back to normal, but it's normal that if you eat, it's going to go up. Going up by a few points and going into the 90s from the 80s is not considered going up. So there you go. But if you drank the glucose balancing juice and your sugar went up to 120, 130, 140, then I would say that's a problem, right? But going up into the 90s is totally normal. It should. It should go up somewhat and then come back down. And it depends on the flexibility, metabolic flexibility of the system, how high it's going to go, how long it's going to stay elevated. But if you're at 30 minutes, it's at 92, and from 89 to 92 is actually, you know, within the margin of error of the device. So I wouldn't even call that going up. Mm-hmm. Yes, ease at Gmail. So nutritional stress like eating disorder could create insulin resistance as well. Absolutely. Absolutely. Nutritional stress and in eating disorders, there's significant emotional disorder, right? There's stress in the body that's causing people to turn to food. Absolutely. Any kind of stress. So that's where we're sometimes digging, because people may seem to be eating all the right foods and exercising and meditating, but there's still some stress in the body, and it could be a hidden infection. It could be basically an old trauma that's playing out. So some people, you know, maybe dad came home in the middle of the night all the time and beat mom up, and, you know, as a young child, you were in your bed just scared to death that, you know, something was going to happen to mom and something was going to happen to you, and then over time you just were afraid to fall asleep. So maybe it didn't happen every night, but you're afraid to fall asleep and you tend to wake up. And the body remembers, and the body will produce that stress response. And it takes a lot of undoing and work to get the body to go back to not doing that so much. You guys have good questions. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to go back to the call. Star 2 on your telephone will raise your hand and we can talk. I'd love to have a conversation with any of you who want to. Let's see. So Freestyle Libre, let me just mention a few things about it. So the Freestyle Libre, I love the 10-day version. They just continued the 10-day version. I had a 10-day version up until about 5 days ago when I used my last one. So I tried to get more. I tried to get another one, and I couldn't because nobody had any more 10 days. So I said, okay, I'll try the 14-day. Now, I tried the 14-day a few months ago when they first came out. I thought it was horrible. I put it on, and I had the 10-day on my other arm for about 12 to 18 hours. And they were always different. The 14-day was always way higher. Compared it to my blood glucose, my finger prick, and it was always way off. And it was erratic, up and down, up and down. So I went back to the 10-day. I've been using the 10-day ever since. Love it. It's always very consistent. I can watch my curves. It does the right stuff. And it compares pretty much identical to my finger stick, unless I'm in the process of going up or coming down, then it's off by about 10 minutes. You know, it's like a lag. So yesterday I put on the 14-day. The advantage of the 14-day one is it calibrates in an hour instead of 12. So when you put a 10-day on, you have to wait 12 hours before it says, okay, we're ready to work it. With the other one, it's an hour. And it lasts 14 days instead of 10. The downside is, number one, it's more expensive proportionally. Like if you calculate the amount, what the cost is per day, it's cheaper with the 10-day. Wouldn't we have expected it to be cheaper with the 14-day? Because realistically, they don't cost any more or less to produce. It's the same little piece of whatever with a little bit of stuff inside that maybe costs them $5 at the most to make, maybe less. So that was the downside. But then when I used it, it was way different. And I used it for a whole cycle, and I never could get it to be equal or similar to my thing. I called up the company, and they said, well, it might balance within a few days. It might be just early on. And nope, nope, nope. They sent me a replacement. Same thing with that one. I gave up. So for months, I used the 10-day, and now I couldn't do anything else. So I got my one yesterday, and I started it up, and it was right before I ate dinner. And so I'd been fasting for quite a number of hours. So when I tested it and it said 67, I went, okay, that sounds reasonable. I ate my dinner, and I had a very low glycemic dinner, and it went up into, I think it went as high as in the 80s. And then it went back down as far as I could tell, before bed. And then this morning, no, it didn't go down. And I'm like, huh, why isn't it going down? And I forgot to check it by the blood. So it was still like, it went up to 9. It had gone up, it stabilized, and then instead of coming down, it went up. And it was in like 92 when I went to bed. And I'm like, huh, that's insane. Why would it be 92? Anyway, I went ahead and went to sleep. I measured it this morning, and it was like 98. When I first woke up, and I'm like, oh, that's crazy. I haven't eaten. I eat low. My typical waking up is 65 to 75. And so I said, okay, I'm just going to monitor it. And I took it again. I was laying in bed. I meditated. It went up to 102 and then 107. And then it came back down, and it's like erratic. So at the time, I measured it on my finger stick. It was 75, which is what it normally is, right? So I'm not real fond of this 14-day. I'm going to make another call into the company and find out what the heck. And it's not just me. Others have bought them and had similar. So before you go investing in the Freestyle Libre, it's crazy. Let's just see what happens. Chris says, can hot flashes cause a sudden blood glucose rise? Yes, it can, because it has to do with the adrenals, right? And definitely. Okay, Chris, hot flashes, yeah. Will you dive deeper into why for some people high-fat diets may impair their glucose insulin receptors and how to know if this path in those particular cases? So first of all, we do know that bad fats will affect it. So that's why we say stay away from the hydrogenated, the heated fats, all that. All of the studies that have ever been done on showing that high fat can impact insulin sensitivity have all been done on commercial garbage fat. None of them have been done on whole food plant-based fats. They've been done on oils and goods and stuff that are processed with fats. How do you know if somebody is sensitive to good fats, whole food plant-based fats, is that they eat a low glycemic diet and they are eating good fats and their sugars are going up in spite of that. And so we monitor that and we see. But I'm not convinced that good whole foods, organic, unheated fats have an impact on insulin sensitivity. I know for a fact for me, it doesn't at all, and I know for lots of clients. So how would you know? How would you know on any of it? And yes, we do go into a lot of detail in the glucose module, is that we're looking at records. We're having people keep careful records, and we're looking at what happens when they eat certain foods. And if we start to see a pattern where every time this person eats some, I don't know, olives, their sugar shoots up way out of range, like 40, 50 points, or goes up to 120, 30, 40, 50. And we're like, huh, is it olives or is it high-fat food? And then we're going to be doing some interpretation, right? We're going to go, okay, well, olives are high in fat. Let's try coconut. You try it with coconut. And it doesn't cause it to go up. Well, maybe it's olives. Maybe there's something in the olives that's not agreeing with that person. But if the coconut does, and then you try another whole food fat, like, you know, some hemp seeds, sunflower seeds, soaked and sprouted nuts, etc., and it consistently is causing the blood sugar to go up, and I don't mean from 85 to 90, I mean from 85 to 120 or 30 or 40 or 50, then I would suspect something going on with fat. The first thing I would think about is not as much the insulin receptors, is that the body's not processing the fat properly. So we'd be looking at liver and gallbladder and figuring out how to handle it. So we want to be having people, you can't compare and say, well, when I eat salad, my sugar's fine. But when they eat, somebody just wrote in a grilled cheese sandwich, it goes up. That doesn't mean it's fat that's putting it up. It means it's a whole lot more than that. So, yeah, I think that I really, really think that we have to look at each individual. We look at the charts and we see where it's going. What else? All right. Somebody else had a question. Susanna, when I, oh yeah, the juice is fine. So Susanna said, the first time I did the test meal, I had a grilled cheese sandwich, cheddar with tomato on sourdough bread. It elevated my glucose to 192 after 45 minutes. No issue, right? 2 days later, I tried 2 paleo donuts and a chocolate chip cookie, and the highest I got was 148. Okay, so those foods are not good foods. Those foods are, even though it says paleo, there's still usually coconut sugar or something like that in there. So why are you confused? I'm not sure. Grilled cheese sandwich on sourdough bread, I would expect it to go up. 2 paleo donuts and a chocolate chip cookie, I would expect it to go up. We can't be comparing the peaks and saying, well, this caused it to go up to 120 and this caused it to go up to this. And what, you know, I'm trying to break that down because that'd drive us insane. It depends on how much carb was in that meal, what kind of stress you were under when you were eating it, what kind of fats were in there. So. She said, I thought sweets elevated the glucose more. Here's the thing, Susanna. Everybody's different. I know people who can eat 5 bananas, 12 bananas, and not raise their glucose, but they eat 2 corn chips and it goes up. White bread, sourdough bread, is sugar. It's sugar. It's pure sugar. It's actually got a higher glycemic index, bread, sugar, you know, starch, flour, than does sugar itself. So, yeah. Neither of those meals is a healthy blood sugar meal, and neither of those meals, based on your response, is a good one. And you're saying, why did the grilled cheese? Well, grilled cheese, first of all, is a dairy. It's probably got some coloring in it, but you had it with sourdough bread, so you have to look at the whole meal. Yeah. Okay. How often do we monitor blood sugar if the daughter does not use the glucose meter? Okay. excuse me. Let me have some water. What I'm interpreting that, Patty, is you have a daughter who you want to monitor her blood sugar and she won't use the meter, right? It's going to be hard. But you're asking how often. So is it that she won't use the meter very often? I mean, because seriously, if we can't get somebody to test it, we can't monitor it. Ideally, we test it every 15 minutes to try to determine the particular person's peak. If they're reticent to do that, I'll at least have them start by checking it at a half an hour and an hour and seeing what's happening in that moment. So you're checking it less. I think that's what you're asking for. But if not, Patty, just go ahead and write again. Angelica. Yeah, so this is really important, what Angelica points out, is that it's really important to do the moment of appreciation, meditation, heart math before eating, because that's going to help to the body to process it better, because we won't have these raging levels of cortisol. We'll be activating the vagus nerve and activating the digestive tract as a result. It's great advice. Wait, is it after each meal and she keeps track on the sheet? Yes, so if we're trying to figure out what the effect of is on particular foods on the blood glucose, what we're going to do is we're going to measure the glucose level before the food so we get a baseline. And then ideally every 15 minutes, but if they're reticent to use it, like I said, you do it less frequently and at least try to kind of guess at when their peak is. If they'll only do it once, it's going to be hard, but at least look at it at 45 minutes to an hour. What we're looking for when we're looking at glucose is we're looking to see it climbing. That's why I do it a lot, climbing, and then hitting a top point and then starting to come down. That top point is their peak, and that's their highest level. And what's happening when medical and diabetic counselors and nurses and all our dietitians are telling people to monitor for diabetes, they're saying measure before your meal and measure 2 hours later. Well, 2 hours later, it should be back to normal, right? So we're not catching their peak. A lot of people are back to normal. I was always back to normal, 85, 2 hours later. But what happened in the middle was that my sugar would shoot up really high depending on what I was eating. So Patty's trying to get at measuring something, and Lynn gave you good advice, is that you can look at your pulse. The pulse is a good indicator if that food is causing stress on the body, not necessarily going to say that this food is making the sugar go up, but how does she feel? Like, if you eat a meal, and it's calorically sufficient, and you feel ravenously hungry afterwards, likely your blood sugar went up, you produced a lot of insulin, your sugar isn't getting into your cells, and that's probably not a good way to go about it. So if you're filling out the meals and looking at how the body's feeling and just eliminating the things where you don't feel really clear and calm, then that's a good thing to do. Yeah, follow through this hard. Yves says, can I talk a little bit about the science behind a red face? Is it insulin resistance, so stomach inflammation, both? Could be any number of things, right? So if somebody eats a food and it causes their face to get red, that could be an allergic response. It could be a histamine response. The body's producing histamines, or that food contained a lot of histamines and the body wasn't able to break it down. Insulin resistance, I don't know if it's a good indication that there's insulin resistance if the face gets red. It's an increase in dilation of the capillaries in the face. Yeah, if you're talking rosacea, that's something different. And rosacea often comes from liver stress. And it's not something that's in response to a meal. It's usually there on a continual basis, and it's usually related to the liver and oftentimes in alcoholics. Oh, okay. So Patty wants to know, where do I find more information on heart math? Go to the stress module. I don't remember what number that is. Tons of stuff in there. There's also, you have access to a free a bonus called the Transforming Stress System, and that's on our Unstoppable Health membership site. So you have access to that. So if you were to click into from the IRSPT site and click the link that says go to the sweet spot, you can go over there. You may have to log in again and then find the Transforming Stress. It's one of the bonuses, Transforming Stress System. That gives you lots of information. Not rosacea, just an inflamed face. So yeast, is this something that happens after eating, or is this something that's there all the time? And yes, Martha says, checking the pulse would show food intolerance. It's not going to really show you insulin resistance. It's really showing you, is the food that you're eating causing a sympathetic response in the body? And food intolerances will do that. Susanna said, you mentioned high levels of cortisol elevates glucose when awakening. What could be the causes of high levels of cortisol overnight? So like I said before, it could be an old trauma stress that you encountered as a child. The person could have been molested, maybe, you know, incest. It could have been that, you know, they were beaten, they were hurt. It could have been that mom and dad fought in the middle of the night when dad or mom came home drunk and there was yelling and screaming. It could be a robbery, a break-in. It could be parasites in the body, and that can cause stress in the body overnight and cause cortisol to go up. It could be that the blood sugar dips too low during the night and causes a cortisol response to bring it up. And in that case, I would look at what's the person eating right before they go to bed. Are they eating too close to bed and causing the insulin to go up and glucose to go up during the night and then crash down? What else is there? Did I miss anything? Parasites, I talked about. Our teeth grinding can also cause excess stress, excess cortisol in the middle of the night. Thank you, Angelica. It's module 4. Perfect. Yes, all the time red face. I would be looking at the potential of that being rosacea. And, you know, it depends on the distribution. Oftentimes it's the cheeks, it's along the cheekbones, not as much in the forehead, but some people with rosacea have it the whole thing. So I'd be looking at all those possibilities, histamine reaction, an environmental histamine reaction. I would be looking at stress, you know, when people get, you know, they get red in the face, right? They get high levels of cortisol, so I'd be looking at that as well. I've said bruxism can cause stress overnight and can cause elevations of cortisol. And the cause of the bruxism could be a stress that is we're not managing it and we're causing us to grind our teeth overnight. And it can also be a sign of parasites, yeah. Yeah, and if your face is red all the time, and like Lynn said, it would be doing an elimination diet. And we lay out an elimination diet in the program as far as just eliminating the top allergy foods, but you could actually do a more significant one. And if you're open to doing some kind of fasting, you might do a day or two of fasting or eating only foods that you rarely eat. That's called the rare foods diet, or eating foods you know agree with you. But it may not be food. It may be environmental, and it could be any number of things that we talked about. These are good questions. Would a fast get rid of parasites? An extended fast could. A short fast, generally, it's not long enough. There's parasites, and I think you got a bonus. Yeah, you do, and I don't know if it's up yet, but we'll make sure that it gets up there quickly, is a bonus of the pieces of my digestive program that we'll talk about that. But, you know, a fast may or may not, you may need to actually take some herbs and stuff. And candida is not a parasite, it's a yeast. Yeah. All right. Let me do a refresh here. Okay. I don't see any hands up. Star 2 raises your hand. I'd be happy to answer your questions. And, I'd love to hear how you're doing, digging in. I know there's a lot there, and it's laid out in a pretty logical fashion. Yeah. All right. I don't see any more questions in the chat. Let me look back at the Q&A. Here we go. If one went through several years of insulin resistance, can we become more prone to it? I'm not sure what that means, but most people that you're going to work with have had insulin resistance or some, you know, pre-insulin resistance or something like that for many years. Like, I had no idea I had that going on for all these years. The longer you continue the diet and lifestyle factors that contribute to insulin resistance, the worse it's going to get and the more prone you are. to having it full blown. Let's see. Oh my gosh, yeah, great question, Susanna. Is non-alcoholic fatty liver disease associated with insulin resistance? Absolutely. Totally, absolutely. Yes. Layla, the pancreas can become dysfunctional with the help of adrenal fatigue, negative based emotions, negative adrenaline, thereby causing calluses. There is a way to heal the pancreas, or does one simply have to adjust it according to the damage? That's a great question. I don't know. You know, without doing some kind of ultrasound or MRI or something with the pancreas to see how much damage has actually been done. And if it's an overt damage, or if it's a lot of intracellular type damage, which you may not see, although you can see cirrhosis kinds of things, you know, hardening. We don't usually talk about cirrhosis of the pancreas. We talk about it of the liver, but it's a thickening and hardening of the tissues and cells. Is there a way to heal? I think that we need to just take the idea. I believe that everything's healable. It depends on how far gone it is, right? If you cut off your arm, you're not going to grow a new arm back, right? So it just depends on how far gone the problem is. But I think that we just have to help people to adjust the diet and the lifestyle in such a way that it's promoting healing overall, right? Supporting the liver, cleaning the environment, supporting detoxification, supporting the blood sugar, the digestive health, and just making sure that everything is clean and pristine. And I think we can increase our chances of it. Had a nice conversation today with someone who works for a company that makes a supplement that's an Ayurvedic formulation. And I just started looking at it, and it looks actually pretty good. They're going to send me some samples, and I'm going to try it out. It's got a lot of different a lot of the herbs that we talk about, like bitter melon and fenugreek and turmeric and all that, but it also has a bunch of other Ayurvedic herbs that have been known to be very effective in this area. Some of it is at regenerating the pancreas, and some of them are geared towards antioxidant properties, and some with, you know, reversing the damage to the insulin receptors. So, yeah. Yes, this is a good question, too. Is it accurate to affirm that the pancreas gets worn out from producing too much insulin, or is it necessarily an autoimmune factor that damages it? It's not just autoimmune factors. There have been studies that I showed in a couple of my presentations. And if you go to the first module, and it has a couple of presentations and some repetition, but the more you hear it, the more it's going to sink in. So yes, some autoimmune damage is it, but every time the sugar goes above 100, there's some damage happening to the beta cells that produce it. So over time, it gets, yeah, worn out from this damage. When you're eating a diet that has a lot of oxidation to it, so like Susanna telling me about the grilled cheese sandwich on sourdough, that's not a food that's going to promote pancreatic healing. It's more going to promote oxidative stress and damage. So we have to look at how far gone it is. But, yeah, it's autoimmune, but it's also worn out, if you want to call it that, from years and years and years of having to work hard. And oxidative stress, yeah. Oxidative stress is a biggie for everything, pretty much. Angelica, what is the primary lab marker we should check for insulin resistance? I'm confused whether my postprandial glucose readings are about my stress or physiology of the day, or if I have a true insulin resistance problem. Yeah, I would say you do want to look at hemoglobin A1C, which will give you your average over time. Excuse me, grab some water. You want to look at insulin, fasting insulin, and then you can always look at postprandial, but are you producing too much insulin? There's the HOMA score, which we talk about in the assessments module, and there's a calculation that you can do for it. You're taking your insulin and your glucose levels or insulin, I can't remember the exact formula, but it's on the page in the assessments, and you can calculate your HOMA score, and that's a good sign of insulin resistance. And you can also look at triglyceride HDL ratio. So those are all indications that there's a problem. Now, when you say if it's just the sugars are going up from the stress of the day, yeah, I mean, I would be looking at that. If you're not eating, or you're eating really good foods and your sugars are still going up, then it may be the stress. But if you're just monitoring and you're getting some foods raising it and some foods not, then that is saying that your body is not processing those foods real well. And, you know, a true insulin resistance problem, right? So we talk about insulin resistance being the diagnosable, you know, fasting is over 100. But then we have the pre-insulin resistance, which is how we detect with the postprandial. So I think mapping, your postprandial mapping is your, you know, one of your best indications. And then I would say that insulin and hemoglobin A1C, and then calculating your HOMA score. Oops. Yeah, good questions. Let's see. I'm going to refresh. Okay. Yeah, and the lab markers, there's a whole book that we have in there, and we put it on, I think, the testing page. At least it's in Sweet Spot, is the three most important lab tests. And then after we did the Sweet Spot, or during the Sweet Spot, we did an interview with Dr. Alan Hopkins, and he talked about it, and I posted that to, I think it's to the Sweet Spot page. Okay. All right. Okay. Let's see. Patty, would you suggest I use Dr. Remy's toolbox to use with my family to watch before we start this program? Yeah, I'm not sure what you mean by my toolbox, right? And I think that the more your family understands, the better. Yeah, so you know where they may end up is in the things I set up for Sweet Spot, the little videos, the video training, and let's see if we, I know it's on Sweet Spot. I know we've put those videos or the links to those on Sweet Spot, but I would love to make sure that it's easily accessible through IRSPT, because those really help the public to understand the science, but not in a way that's like, so deep. Susanna, besides the sting and questionnaires, sting, I'm not sure what the sting is. Is there another body indicator to know if somebody's having insulin resistance, body changes, fat in parts of the body, cellulite? So skin tags are often a sign of blood sugar imbalance, those little tags that hang off. The belly fat, you know, like the extra fat around the middle. Brain fog, all those symptoms, right? Skin discoloration, sometimes, like I said, the little skin tags can be helpful to look at. And that's in part of the assessments. Martha, Patty, I hope they will sit with you and watch. A lot of people have watched those summits where Dr. Renery is a speaker, and that has seemed to get people interested because there's so many types of teaching that may ignite interest. Yes. Sorry, which book? What are we talking about? Book. I don't know what you're asking, Yves. I didn't see anything about a book. Working with family is the hardest of all, and reiterates, yes. I'm getting resistance for starting it. Yes, yes, you will. It's hard. It's a challenge. I did get my husband to do it when I got him to test his blood sugar, and two foods that he loved was he had a big bowl of berries, and it raised his sugar to like 180, and then he had buckwheat, and it raised his sugar to 180, and he was convinced, and he's been doing it ever since and doing a great job with it. Patty says, I guess if I can get them through this, I can educate anywhere. You're absolutely right. Alan Hopkins book. Oh, it's not Alan Hopkins book. It's a booklet. Oh, let me give you the link to it. I'll find it. It's on the Sweet Spot site. And then Alan Hopkins did a talk. Let me see if I can find it on the Sweet Spot site. And then I'll just post the link here. It'll take a couple of minutes to locate it. You guys know how to find the Sweet Spots program, right? Is anybody not? I think that's what we wanted to do with the second kickoff, was do it on Zoom so I could do screen shares. Instant Teleseminar has been telling me for years that they're going to be putting in a screen share and video capability, and it just hasn't happened. So it's frustrating. All right, let me get there to Sweet Spot, and I will tell you where it is in Sweet Spot. And we can, Lynn or Angelica, would you make a note for me to have Jazzy upload the, make sure the bonus page is set up with the bonuses, and then, because I think it's the same page we can use from last year, and then let's add a link to the lab testing booklet that I put together for Sweet Spot. And then, where is it? Sweet Spot. There we go. The lab testing booklet and then the links to all the videos that I use as the precursor to offering Sweet Spot. Okay, test results. I think it's on bonuses 2019. Oh, look there. And it might have actually put it in the, let's see, gut repair. No, let me look one more place. I think it's on the assessments page on foundations. Assess yourself. Test your glucose. Yeah, assess yourself. I'm pretty sure that's it. It's either that or test your glucose. And I'll just give you the direct link. Ah, so the HOMA score. There's a calculator, and that's a good sign. That's the one I was just talking about with Angelica. I'm going to copy this, and I'm going to put this into the chat. And this is on the Assess Yourself page on the Sweet Spot program in Foundations. Okay, let me find my, where did my thing go? I lost the page that I had you on. Here we are. So I'm going to put this in the chat. Okay, and I'm going to give you the link to that HOMA score because that the link didn't transfer. Okay, this is the link to the HOMA score. How do you calculate if you wanted to just put the numbers in and get it calculated? And then if I go back here to Sweet Spot, I'm looking for, it should be on the foundations. Maybe it's on the test your glucose one. I know I put that booklet in there. Let's see if I can find it. Oh, where is it? Huh. It didn't end up keeping. I know I put it on one of these pages. Let me go back to assess yourself. See if we can find it. Ah, here we go. It's on the page called Assess Yourself, same one where the HOMA thing is. It's called Three Critically Important Lab Tests. And let me see, click here to download. Let me get the link to that, and I'll put that in here. But then I want to find you Dr. Hopkins thing. There you go. And actually, I think there was a Dr. Hopkins thing on the bonuses page. Emotional eating. Dr. Hopkins metabolism cheat sheet. Let me give you this link too. This is on the bonuses page for the Sweet Spot, which you guys should have access to. At least those of you who joined us. Yeah, those of you should have it. Let me put this into your chat as well. Yeah, so that's a nice cheat sheet on all of the labs. And then his video, let me find that. I had it on YouTube. I sent it out in an email. It was to people who came to the live stream. I know where I'll find it. Let me see if I can find it. If not, we'll make a note to upload that whole series of videos. That way it's good education for your family as well. We go to sweetspotsolution.com, funnels. We have so much stuff. I was telling somebody earlier today, it's like I have this $1 million hard drive. Like if I could package everything on my hard drive together, I have like so much resource. Okay, sweet. Okay. All right. So I should be able to find Webinar, live stream access. Here we go. That's the access to the live stream replay. Here we go. Pretty sure I have it on here. I'm going to give you a link to this page. Okay. This is the replay of everything that I did on a one-day live stream before we did Sweet Spot. And then on here, yep, is a video that Dr. Hopkins did. I'm going to just give you this link. All right. And Angelica, if you could do me a favor, or Lynn, whichever one is on, if you could just copy these links that I just put in here. Whoops, did it not go through? Okay, there we go. Oops, that went twice now. All right, that's a replay of the insulin resistance workshop. And that has on there the really great video that Dr. Hopkins did on the advanced glucose testing. Okay, and if we could just copy these. Actually, I'm just going to copy these and put them in my. Okay, got it. I'm going to copy these down, and then I'll have them added to the insulin resistance site. All right, so what else? Oops, my chat disappeared. All right, I think there were a few others. All right, cysts in the ovaries of fibroids can be an indicator of insulin resistance, or does it necessarily have to be PCOS? Well, here's the thing. Or fibroids, I guess you mean. You know, ovarian cysts can be, you know, insulin resistance and ovarian cysts says to me it's PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. Polycystic ovarian syndrome is very much associated with insulin resistance, definitely. Yeah, cysts or fibroids. Yeah. So fibroids, I don't know for sure if there's a relationship. I think almost everything has some relationship with insulin resistance just because the tissues don't get the proper nutrition and the proper energy supply that they need, and they get damaged by the excess insulin, the excess glucose. Fibroids are more of an imbalance between estrogen and progesterone, a much higher estrogen than progesterone, so estrogen dominance. But cysts in the ovaries have been highly associated with excess testosterone, also excess estrogen, and insulin resistance. Good questions. Okay, I think, what else? You said that these links in the dashboard, they're all, most of those links that I gave you were on the Sweet Spot part of the site. I'd have to look on the IRSPT part to see if they put up, but we'll make sure we get them put up on a bonuses page. Lynn says buying a hard drive because to put all your stuff there. Download everything because you have access to everything that we have, and you can download it, right? And then you can travel with your little hard drive and take them anywhere, whereas if you just rely on looking at stuff on the internet, then you have to have internet access. And sometimes, you know, you take a trip and you're in an area where there's no internet, and or you're on an airplane and you want to look at this stuff. Either one of those little flash drives, which are very small and you can get them up to like 64 gig, or a little hard drive, either way. I like the little flash drives because they're easier to carry. Not sure if this, Layla, not sure if this question applies now. In making food recommendations for vegan clients, where do you land on protein powders, assuming one can find a clean one without natural flavors? Clients who have insulin resistance but want to use protein powders. Yeah, there's quite a number of ones that I like that I've used. And Yves says whey protein is insulinogenic. Yes, it raises insulin, so I don't recommend whey. But I like Sacha Inchi, and there's some really pure ones that are just Sacha Inchi. Sun Warrior recently came out at one called Collagen Peptides. Not good if person's sensitive to rice, but they have a lot of other herbs and things in there that are very supportive of building good collagen. Sun Warrior also has one called Warrior Blend. There's another one that I ordered recently that doesn't have any additive anythings, and I can't remember the name of it. Somebody in the program actually recommended. So there's any number of them, and we have a protein powder. We have a place where we talk about protein powder. I think it's probably in the nutrition module with some of my, and in the guide. We have a guide that's the sweet spot guide to our recommended products, and they're listed in there too. Yeah, pumpkin seed. I found a pumpkin seed protein, and then I ordered it. It was pumpkin. There was one pumpkin, one sunflower, and one was almond powder protein, and I ordered them to try. And I forgot to read real carefully, and they all have quinoa in them. So far, they haven't raised my blood sugar, but it's something to keep in mind. Susanna, excited about the program. I hope this will be the one that helps with my health issues and clients. Yep, I just take it step by step, apply it to yourself first, and then you go from there. And when they see you excited about it, and they see you getting results from it, they're going to follow. Martha asks, is Mighty Maca okay? I love Mighty Maca. Some people are sensitive, and there's like 25 ingredients, so if you tend to be like certain herbs or whatever, just be careful and get a sample and try it. But I love it. Yes, the Creating a Healing Kitchen e-guide has a lot of those protein powders. Dr. Ely, next product might be a good yeah, I'm not making one. You know why? Because I've looked into making products, and it takes a lot of time to do the formulation. It takes a lot of time to find the somebody that will do it for you. There's a great liability, so you have to take out huge insurance because people could say, your thing made me sick and I'm going to sue you. Whereas if I send them to buy something at somebody else's, they can sue that person if they don't like it. And you have to buy like boatloads. I mean, literally pallets and pallets and pallets in advance. So then you have to be able to sell them all in advance, or they have a shelf life and they go bad. So not something that I'm going to be doing anytime soon anyway. Is collagen peptides good to consume? Yeah, I know I'm not a big fan of collagen, like animal collagen, because I'm a little concerned about the source and lead and all that kind of stuff. But the one that Sun Warrior does is all plant-based. So it's a plant-based, they call it collagen peptides, and it's basically it's actually just certain peptides from the rice that have been shown to support collagen growth. Vitamin C, it's high in the amino acids, proline, hydroxyproline and lysine that help to support collagen growth. And then a bunch of herbs. It's a really nice thing. I like it. Do we need protein shakes? No. I hardly ever. I mean, if I'm traveling and I'm not getting enough food, I'll take them. Or if something in me says, or if I hurt myself, I'll take it if I want extra protein. But don't take them. You don't need it. You need to eat real food. Ease. I'm totally passionate about this. I went through an eating disorder for years, and only in the last couple of years have been able to understand all the symptoms together. I love this subject. Thank you, Dr. Ina Maria. I love the way you teach and how everything is put together. Great. I'm so excited. And this is one of my favorite topics, too, because it's so overlooked and so misunderstood, and it just needs to be out there to change people. Oh, Lila says Edible Beauty has a vegan collagen. I'll have to look at that one too. I think this is the latest. A couple months ago, Amazing Grass came out with one called Glow. And then Sun Warrior came out with theirs, and you're saying Edible Beauty. I'm going to write it down. I'll check it out. Here's the thing with me. I always like to try things before I recommend it to anybody. And so I buy all the stuff, and if you could see what, I'll show it to you sometime on, we'll do it on a kitchen show, or I'll show, but I have this huge collection of protein powders and herbs and all this stuff. And then the protein powders I don't use very often. So anyway, great. I'll check that out. Thank you. Thank you, Layla. And Lynn uses Anima Mundi. Sounds like it's an Ayurvedic company. She's got it listed there, new plant-based collagen. And that one doesn't have the protein, so if you don't like taking the protein, the others have the protein. This is just a bunch of herbs that naturally boost collagen in the skin. Silica, some adaptogens like FOTI, Gynostemma, and what else? Read more about it here. The exact ingredient, Heshowu, which is known as an herb in Chinese medicine. They call it, you know, the old man changes their beard from gray to black. Again, it's like, it's supposed to be really potent for that. It's an adaptogen. Horsetail, which is really good for silica, for strength. Gynostemma, nettles. But again, nettles, again, is full of silica and all kinds of minerals to support. Calendula, real soother. Mangosteen, fruit and peel, and Gynostemma, which helps to balance blood sugar. So, good stuff. There's all kinds of stuff. There's a lot of products. It used to be really hard to find, but now you can. Yes, thank you, Dr. Rita Marie. It's putting the ahas into things I've been wondering about for years. So glad I could help. I've been, you know, doing this for the last 35 years, been doing this for the last 35 years, ever since my health fell apart. So that's 38 years. Holy cow. That's a long time I've been doing this, trying to just solve my own health problems and then doing this for other people and being this investigator. And I have ahas every day. I learn things every day and I absolutely love it. Those of you who may have missed it last week, I did a talk on, it was a, we still have the link to it if Lynn wants to put it in there. It was the, fasting. It was on fasting, intermittent fasting, and food diets that mimic fasting. Many of you probably went to it, but if any of you missed it, it was well worth it. Because when I did that, I talked a lot about the effects, metabolic effects it has on insulin and all that. And I want to put that one in the program as well. So I'm going to make sure that we put in on an extras page. I'm going to put in the fasting webinar. All the stuff from the Sweet Spot webinars and Alan Hopkins. Okay. Yeah, so I'll make sure that we add that. We're constantly adding new stuff, so. I would love to see how she uses this along with the information. Oh, she's talking about Lynn Rose. She often comes to these calls. She's a homeopathic practitioner, a nurse she was a nurse for years, and she's now in a nutritional endocrinology practitioner training. Yeah, homeopathy, awesome. You know, I'm a dabbler in homeopathy, so I know certain things. I work with people. I just recommended a couple of homeopathics for my son the other day because he broke his ribs. And so I got him on some arnica and some phytum. And yeah, homeopathy as formulas is more what I generally would use because I'm not a practitioner, but I've done it where I pull out my materia medica and figure things out. It's great. She did Lynn did a nice talk for our nutritional endocrinology people in an advanced section that we have on homeopathy. And we have somebody else come in and do a talk on homeopathic, like, flu shot type things. You know, how do you prevent against that and immunizations using homeopathy? You know, it's not really immunizations, but supporting the immune system on particular organisms. So really good stuff. We do a lot of that advanced stuff we do in the nutritional endocrinology training. It's a longer program and, you know, it's 36 modules and covers just about everything, you know, including the emotional, spiritual aspects of it, or energetic, I would say, not spiritual as much. All right. I'm going to go to the other questions and see if anybody put more in there. And if we're done, we're going to be done. Let's see. Okay, those are all taken care of. I'm going to go to see if anybody's hands are up. No hands are up. We had all our shy folks today. So what I'm going to do is just say we're going to call it a day. Thank you guys so very much for being here, for all your support, for being on this journey together. Reminder that you all have a free ticket to Shine. So go ahead and sign up at ShineLiveBonus.com, ShineLiveBonus.com. We ask you to put a $97 deposit down. You get it back when you show up, and that covers us so that we don't, you know, reserve seats for people who say they're going to come but they don't. At least that covers us for the extra cost of setting that up. So $97 deposit. If you want to, you pay an extra $200 and then get the VIP treatment, which includes all the meals and extra goodie bags and some extra trainings that we're going to put in there as well. yeah, so shine. I would love to meet you all. I know a lot of you already signed up, but I can't wait to meet the rest of you at Shine, shinelivebonus.com. And what else? I'm going to open up the lines, and we could all say goodbye. On the count of three, everybody say goodbye. One, two, three. Bye, everybody. Talk soon. Oh, there you are. I'm like saying everybody's mics must be muted. Huh. Interesting. Maybe it's on my end because I'm not hearing anything.
No. No. Bye, everybody.
Okay. Bye, everybody. Interesting. There's a bunch of people there, but I don't
They're
hear
all just
any.
Shy.
They must be all shy or muted because I'm not even hearing like the clatter, clatter. So maybe they're all muted.
Yeah.
All right. Bye, everybody. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.